Coming up next, another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.
Welcome to another edition of Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president, Local 237 Teamsters. With us, a very special guest for the very first time, New York City Councilman Yousef Salaam. In 1989, at just the age of 15 years old, Yousef was tried and wrongfully convicted in the Central Park jogger case, along with four other Black and Latino young men. The exonerated five spent between 7 and 13 years behind prison for crimes they did not commit in 2002. A lifelong resident of Harlem, during the past two decades, Yousef has become a family man, a father, a poet, an activist, an inspirational speaker. In November 2023, Yousef won the election for New York City Council in District 9. Among many achievements and honors, Yousef is the recipient of a lifetime achievement award from President Barack Obama. He is a board member of the Innocence Project, a TV contributor on CNBC, CNN, MSNBC, and Fox. Yousef also authored his memoirs entitled Better, Not Bitter. Thank you for coming on, Reaching Out.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
For those who don't know you, your life is more than just a brief bio. After you were released and exonerated, how did you put your life back together?
Well, much of the challenge of putting your life back together, of course, as you can imagine, being such a young person entering the criminal justice system, I was 15 years old when it happened. And being released at 23, I was a person who was considered an adult, I would say, but didn't have any of the necessary toolkits or necessary ingredients in my toolkit to actually be an active adult with the experience of that person of that age. You know, in fact, I was severely handicapped and had to rely greatly on the support, not necessarily support that I was completely conscious of, but the support of my family, gently allowing me to lean on them as I began to repair myself, and they also helped me to repair myself. And so, as you can imagine, having such a strong family support system is really part of the greatest contribution to helping me to find a way back to life, back to society, back to, you know, being a productive member of society, opposed to being something that they often return to society, which is a broken person. And, you know, as they say, hurt people. So the biggest challenge is, how do you become a person who understands the pain and now can have a seat at the table of support, of progress, of assistance, you know? But a lot of that, like I said, from able to have such a strong family support system and also a strong wife, strong children, you know, you need all of the necessary ingredients that you can imagine to be able to really survive and, in fact, thrive.
Tell us about, I see Councilmember Dr. Yousef Salaam. Tell us about your education. Tell us where you went to school, how you started putting those pieces of your life back together.
Yeah, so I have an honorary doctorate. I've always told people that that's exactly where I got my doctorate from. The organization that gave me the doctorate said to me, look, you didn't get an opportunity to go to school in a traditional sense, but you went to 7 years of prison. And in that time, you used your time really to learn all that you can and could. And so therefore, they wanted to honor me with a honorary doctorate in the humanities. I had actually had an associate's degree in applied science. And then I was going ahead to actually continue my studies to get a bachelor's degree. But, at that time, I think the governor was Pataki, George Pataki in New York. Because people were so angry at the fact that people were going to prison and coming out with college degrees. And because people, I think a lot of things contributed to the fact that education was taken out of the prison en masse. But for me, it was, one of the most difficult things not to continue to be educated, And so I came home from prison and I just started to continue my education by being a lifelong learner, reading as many books as I could, participating in the great process of, adding truth to power, learning as much as I could about the system that in fact tried to break me, tried to arrest my development. And because of that, as I said, was given a lifetime, was given a honorary doctorate.
For your first year in office, what are some of your priorities, your legislative priorities?
Absolutely. Biggest priorities, as you know, is to make sure, in fact, that we get the opportunity to have affordable housing. And I want to do something that's maybe a bit more non-traditional when it comes to that. I think about a lot of what's been stated in terms of affordability in New York, and a lot of the affordability rests on the idea that the area median income is where it's at, right? But that's set by the federal government. If we had the opportunity to have the people who wanted to build up our community give us an opportunity to really speak to the income levels of the individuals of those communities, it would be such a more fair process, because we're talking about being able to afford, right? We're talking about affordable housing and being able to afford the homes or the apartments that you're applying for. And that looks very different for a person who, say, makes $14,000 a year max. A person who makes $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 max. When we think about those things, affordability can't rest necessarily just on the area median income when a lot of people are falling below that. The other thing, of course, is I want to tackle education in a really holistic way to ensure, in fact, that everyone has a great education. I want to tackle, public safety, right? I'm thinking about the fact that I was appointed as the chair of public safety. And I want to make sure that I do that position well, given my lived experiences. Being able to look at the issues from a different vantage point, in fact, allowing for me to take the experiences that I've had and that many of us share and really speak truth, speak life into that system so that we can get the most gains.
You are the chair, and you mentioned of the Public Safety Committee, so we're going to go past that question. But you also held your first hearing on Monday. This past Monday, as an exonerated man presiding over a hearing which the NYPD testified on wrongful convictions, what was that experience like? Any surprises?
Well, I mean, it was an experience that was necessary, I would say, and it was filled with full circle moments and opportunities, I would say, for us to get it right. Right. On the one hand, you have a department that is inheriting a lot of the gains and losses from yesteryear. And to be able to talk to those things and really add life to those experiences by sharing some of my very lived experiences, but also, incorporating that into the experiences of the community itself. Very, very important, very impactful. For me, I think part of maybe some of the more surprising things was, how the conversation, not necessarily from the primary stakeholders, but the conversation began to shift away from the reason why we were there, talking about wrongful convictions and how do we fix and how do we mitigate those things, especially coming at it specifically from the NYPD's perspective and how they can help us to make sure that we don't have wrongful convictions in the first place. As you know, the Central Park Jogger case is a case that is Central Park Jogger case is a case that has national notoriety. But the worst part about it is that because of that false accusation, like many people, when they get accused, although the system says that you're innocent until proven guilty, because we live in such a cancel culture of the day, that oftentimes the appearance of guilt or the accusation of guilt does not allow for there to be the presumption of innocence until proven guilty. And so we're up against the wall, having to constantly defend ourselves. Like right now, there's so many, what would I call it? I would call it energy. There's so much energy out there that wants to believe that the system made a mistake twice. They want to believe that the system made the mistake of exonerating us, and that the system made the mistake of then electing me to be a city councilman for the same community that I was taken away from. Very interesting when you think about those perspectives. Very, very interesting, as opposed to what true justice would be. The fact that we were exonerated, the fact that the legislation and the adjudication of our case, as it was re-examined, gave light to the fact that, and I think this is wording from the DA's office themselves. They said, had we known then what we found out, what we now know, we would have never arrested them. But this is where we are. We're in this position where we're constantly still fighting for the truth. And I think as a member of our community in a position that I am in now, I'm also fighting for the truth and for justice for our community and for our people in general in America and abroad.
Now, that was just an interesting statement that you just made to me, because I never looked at it that way. But of course, I don't hear everybody's point of view that you were wrongfully, I would say, did you use the word convicted twice, once for the crime and then once because you were elected, and because you were wrongly accused and convicted for a crime that you did not commit. Therefore, that takes away your right to represent people in the community. That's irony. It's irony because you have every right to represent the community that you're representing. And because of the wrongful conviction, and you were able to, I would say, not let your circumstances that happened to you define who you were, you rose above that. You make a stronger candidate than any one of us, because you were able to put the broken pieces of your life together where you can function in a normal society. So I applaud you for that part of your life and moving forward. And I admire you, and I get a chance to tell you publicly, that's how I felt and that's how I feel about the situation that you find yourself in. And I know that some of the colleagues, some of your friends that you were wrongly convicted along with did not have that fortunate circumstance. And I don't know how they're doing, because I'm not in contact with them. I see one, Corey, but for somebody to say that you don't have a right to represent the community which you were wrongfully convicted in is just asinine. So I just want to tell you, you are inspiration, your story, and you moving forward. And I really hope that if they're dissatisfied with you representing your community, I hope one day you get to represent more parts of this city and further discuss them, if that's what their opinion is.
Well, I thank you for that. You know, definitely the work of making sure that the constituents in my community is upheld, that the value that I add to it is definitely given, is very important. You know, it's like a personal thing for me specifically, because when I think about, you know, all of the people who in fact have needs the people who are crying out for justice, the people who are saying, look, this is wrong. You know, they don't get the opportunity, many of them, to have the type of success or to have the type of relief, I would say. Maybe relief is a better word, but they don't get the opportunity to have the type of relief that I received, right? That type of relief that is life-given, that gives me the opportunity to participate again, you know? They get the opportunity to go to their graves oftentimes with the grief that they've gone through, you know, the trauma that they experience. You know, we often talk about PTSD, and PTSD oftentimes is regulated or relegated rather to people who have been returning citizens from war, like they're the returning veterans of war, right? And rightly so. But when I think about also fact that we, those of us who were wrongfully convicted of crimes we didn't commit, the fact that when I think about the education system and how we need to have justice that is involved in it, that gives everyone the opportunity to have a very robust, life-giving education that speaks to children being the future, I can't help but think about how there's a system in place, especially in our public school systems, that speaks death upon our lives, right? And what I mean by that is that they throw dirt on our birth from the very inception of our birth by calculating how many prisons to build by the time our children are in the third and fourth grade. This is through the public schools. So therefore, that means to me, or that tells me, that there's a huge problem on the one hand, but that there's also a huge opportunity. The opportunity is that we can most certainly change that by providing the best education we can. And we know we can because we've seen it done. But it also tells me that in some ways we are prisoners of, or we are imprisoned because of the politics of others. And so if I'm a political prisoner because of that, then as a returned citizen, I'm a prisoner of war. A war that I did not want to be a part of, but a war that I was thrust into, that I now have the opportunity to do something about, to use my experiences and say, this is our way forward. And guess what? I may not have all the answers, but I do know that as a community of people who have experienced the worst of it, we do have the answers, because as I often said, those who have been close to the pain should have, and in fact, must have a seat at the table.
You're listening to Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, President, Local 237 Teamsters. With us is very special guest, Council Member Yusef Salam. And we're just talking about his experiences. And right now we're going to ask him, overall, what accomplishments do you hope to achieve with your committee? You have this high profile, very important public safety committee. What do you hope to achieve?
I mean, the biggest hopes to achieve are to make sure, in fact, that we provide a more safe society, a more safe community. I really hope that we get the opportunity to really experience safety in a way that has never been seen in the greatest city, in the greatest, you know, communities. You know, being a person who has come from Harlem, who was born in Harlem, who lives in Harlem, who represents Harlem, I think is, you know, Harlem is known around the world. And when you think about New York City itself, when people say, hey, where are you from? You say New York. You know, when they asked further clarity on specifically where, and you say New York City, people's eyes light up. You're from New York City? Like the city so big, they named it twice. That's what they used to call New York City, right?
Right. New York, New York.
You know, New York, New York. I mean, the biggest gain, the biggest hope that I can hope for is to make sure that we have more safety And what does that safety look like? It looks like equity. It looks like truth. It looks like reconciliation. It looks like transparency so that we can get things right and that we make sure that we get it right through that process. And it looks like fairness, right? Because we don't want to use the color of a person's skin as a judgment to their innocence or guilt. We want to, in fact, look at the character of our people and provide opportunities of value, because we know every single person is born a value. Every single person has a purpose. But if we are robbed of that, and in fact, if we participate in our own development being arrested, then we become agents where the conditions that we live in and are trying to fight our way out of are more unsafe and more burdensome.
That was well put. Well said. I have a lot of questions, but unfortunately, we don't have a lot of time. We're going to ask that you come back at your convenience. We can continue the conversation. You can come back anytime you want. If you have a message that you want to get out, unfiltered, no questions, no pushback, you feel free to come back on Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd. You have a home here to talk about whatever issues you want to talk about and bring forward to your community and the rest of the city and all of our listeners. You've been listening to Reaching Out. Gregory Floyd, President, Local 237, a very special guest, Council Member Yousef Salam. We thank you for coming on Reaching Out.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to tune in again each and every Saturday at this same time for another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237. The preceding pre-recorded program paid for by Teamsters Local 237.